All right, my friends, congratulations. You made it to the weekend and to the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. Welcome to Choose FI. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
Brad, super excited to get into it. My family has been sick all weekend long. My wife went down for the count. My kids went down for the count. I have been all hands on deck, but they're starting to get on the mend. Everybody's on antibiotics. Everybody's feeling better. I Lysoled the table, so hopefully you can escape the studio without contracting whatever this throat upper respiratory illness is. I've been crossing my fingers, gargling salt water, taking my multivitamins, and generally crossing my fingers that I would still have a voice. We actually had to kick back the episode. We normally record on Tuesdays, but we actually recorded on Wednesdays just to make sure my family was kind of out of the woods. We're starting to feel better. How are you doing?
Wow. That is quite a little story there. Yeah, it's been crazy around your house. I know. I certainly appreciate the Clorox disinfecting wipes that we have here right by the
table. This episode brought to you by Clorox disinfecting wipes, killing 99.999% of bacteria in less than 10 seconds or less.
See them on the YouTube channel. But yeah, I think this was the first time that we ever actually contemplated, wow, we might not have a Friday Roundup. I mean, we do record these things the week of, and it was very touch and go there with your entire family. So glad to hear everybody's on the mend, certainly. And we've had some health issues in my family as well. My wife, Laura, actually had this kind of innocuous like ear issue, but she got an antibiotic and she actually wound up having a horrible allergic reaction to it to the point where she was actually hospitalized. Yeah, it was an overnight visit. Thankfully, as soon as she got off the antibiotic, it started clearing from her system and this rash issue that she had cleared up. But now I'm seeing the frightening side of medical bills.
You don't even want to check your mailbox, right?
No.
It's coming.
Well, sadly, I have a United Healthcare login, so I see every time a claim is processed. And yes, we actually hit our deductible for 2019, of course, in December.
Oh, yeah, right. That's exactly what happened to us.
So yeah, we basically have a catastrophic insurance plan. I think it was $6,650 individual deductible, $13,300 family deductible, but Laura unfortunately hit her deductible. So yeah, it looks like that's going to be about $5,000 out of pocket.
All right. Well, I guess the question then, Brad, is with the overflow, the stuffed mailbox full of receipts that are actually coming through, you know, what are you doing with that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess there is some minor silver lining other than obviously my wife is healthy, right? Like that's all that really matters. So I don't care about the money. That's why we pursue FI, right? Is when catastrophic issues like this come up, we can weather the storm. So this is but a blip on the radar. It is not something that is worrying me, but you know, the kind of, I guess, silver lining of this, the minor silver lining is it finally spurred me on to do something that I probably said on the podcast I've already done and sheepishly did not do, which was scan all of my receipts for future HSA reimbursements. Mm. So now I have a Dropbox folder that will live for perpetuity, really. And every year I have an Excel document that shows all of the medical expenses that we paid out. And I have a scanned copy of every single one of these invoices. So we heard, and I asked this question specifically to Jackie on episode 161. She said that it was sufficient to have the invoices scanned in. You didn't need receipts from the doctor or anything because there's no specific guidance right now from the IRS. So having that as backup should be sufficient. So,
point of clarification, when you say invoices, are you basically saying you're just bringing it out of United Healthcare?
Is that when you So that would be an EOB. So the invoice is what I received in the mail from the doctor or hospital saying you owe $3,020.57. It's not showing that I paid it. Now, if I needed to follow through on that, I could look at credit card receipts or I could look at a check or some such. But according to Jackie, she believed it was sufficient to have that invoice. Now, if you really wanted to dot I's and cross T's, you could then, in my case, I pay these by credit card to get the travel rewards points, obviously, since there's no fee. I could print out or get a PDF of that credit card bill showing that I did pay it. I think that probably would behoove me in a larger instance, like paying a hospital multiple thousands of dollars. But I think it's probably a little excessive for the $87 you pay to your primary care physician. So literally yesterday I went through and ticked and tied every single dollar we spent in 2019. And I have all of the invoices scanned on this Dropbox folder.
So if you want to say the glass is like 1/8 full, yeah, right? It's 1/8 full. Then that means that like you could potentially, you know, if you have a really bad sick year, you could have like $13,000, you know, of eligible medical expenses that are now accounted for. So this HSA, this baby HSA, well, it's not so baby anymore. You know, you have $21,000, maybe $24,000 in there. It's growing and growing and growing. At some point down the road, you're adding those years together of medical bills. Like, let's be honest, in a perfect world, you have $13,000 of healthcare bills that cover your entire life. But in reality, you know, you're going to have medical bills each and every year. So you keep tallying that. At some point, you have maybe 50, 60, 70, $100,000 in medical bills over your lifetime. You've tracked the receipts year by year. You have this, I do it in Google Drive, but it's the same idea. And you could say, wow, at any point in time, literally at any point in time, this is not subject to retirement age, 59 and a half, whatever else. At any point in time, I can take this money out of this account that's been growing in the because of the market. I can take it out tax and penalty free, free money sitting growing there on your behalf. Maybe the episode, the glass is 1/8 full. Always the optimist.
Love it.
You know, it's actually funny, as you mentioned, travel rewards. It's great when, you know, friends shoot you questions here and there. It actually prompts you to think, ooh, what have I missed? I didn't think about it from that perspective. And we actually covered this question almost 2 years ago, but I think it's time to bring it back up. And in this case, my friend messaged us, him and his wife. He said, hey, we're recovering Dave Ramsey graduates. And in that, he meant that we don't have a credit score anymore. They went and checked Credit Karma and they've got dashes. Yes. And he's like, I'm just realizing this kind of sucks. It's kind of holding me back a little bit. So we want to get back on the bandwagon. We actually do have, like, you know, before the credit kind of just disappeared, the credit floated in the upper 600s, 700s, that sort of thing. But now we're kind of like, ooh, we got to kind of get started. So he says, mine, I think, still has something that's around like a 660 just because of my student loans and that sort of thing. Hers, I think it used to be in the 700s, but it's disappeared. It's just dashes. So we want to get started. We want to do some travel rewards. We want to know where to start and, you know, if you have any suggestions. And so, well, I certainly kind of have my idealistic cards to start with. Some of these are premium cards for people with premium credit. And there is a lower threshold. So it's kind of two questions, you know, can you get accepted? What cards could you get accepted for with like a 640, 660 credit? And then two, if you're working towards this with the goal of getting a better credit score, is there maybe a card that you should start with that sort of consideration? And I was just wondering, I told him I'd ask and get it included on the roundup this Friday. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Jonathan, there is a lot there to discuss. I think as you alluded to, all of the premium cards that we talk about, especially cards like the Chase Sapphire Preferred and the Capital One Venture and cards like this that we really highly recommend for people getting started with travel rewards, most of those are going to require an excellent credit score of, let's say, 700 or above. And realistically, the higher credit score you have, the more likely it is to get approved for those cards. So for people with no credit in this case, or let's say good credit as it's defined, which is probably above a 650 or thereabouts, six middle sixes, let's say, I think those people are going to have a very hard time getting approved for one of these premium travel cards. So while you, I guess, technically could apply for them and just roll the dice and see what happens, I think that's probably not the optimal strategy that I would recommend. I would say the first aspects, and really, Choose FI is about financial literacy. A major aspect of being financially literate and financially powerful is having a significant credit score that you can leverage. So I think getting started with a card, maybe lowering your sights a little bit. I was thinking you can even just Google credit cards for good credit and you'll find lists. I know I found something here that says cards like the Capital One Quicksilver is an option. the Chase Freedom Unlimited, which actually jumped out to me. If this is a car that you can get approved for with just good credit, this card actually produces Chase Ultimate Rewards points. Now, they aren't the transferable points that we love so much from Sapphire Preferred, Sapphire Reserve, the Ink Business Preferred card, but they are Ultimate Rewards. So theoretically, you could start earning these points when you got to the point where you could get approved for one of the premium cards, like the Sapphire Preferred. You could open that card. You could take all of these Ultimate Rewards that you had been earning on this Freedom Unlimited for whatever period of time it takes you to get from your good credit score to an excellent 700 or above, and you could combine them into that more valuable Sapphire Preferred card, just for instance. If someone asked me that exact question, I think that is the strategy that I would start with, is get approved for a card, start paying on time and in full every single month, and see how long it takes to get your credit score up to a 700, 720, 750, who knows? And then you could start applying in earnest for these premium cards. In this case, starting with a card like the Chase Freedom Unlimited would be a good strategy for both getting that credit score higher and potentially earning travel rewards points.
So to clarify for the audience, when we talk about good credit, you know, as opposed to fair credit or bad credit or, you know, nuclear bomb credit, the Chase Freedom Unlimited, when we're talking about it in this case, is it reasonable to think that if you have in between, and this could be based on guidance provided by Chase or maybe by anecdotal evidence provided by people that have applied for, is it reasonable to think that with a 650 or beyond credit, you know, 650 to 750, somewhere in that range, and I think that encompasses everywhere from fair to good, you could get a Chase Freedom Unlimited card?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I do not work for Chase. I do not know if they will approve you or not. I think there is, based on the anecdotal evidence that I've read online, that you would have a pretty good chance of getting approved. But this is just, Jonathan, one example off the top of my head. There are many cards. The bedrock point here is get your credit score up. Mm. So you need to get approved for a credit card. You need to put some everyday purchases on it. You need to pay it off on time and in full every single month. Okay, so that is like table stakes for what we're talking about here. That is the whole game. And then once your credit score improves, then you can get to a point where you can apply for the real premium travel rewards cards.
So I think that's probably the point here. You know, assuming you don't have nuclear bomb credit, which is a different issue altogether, but you have maybe fair credit, you know, so 650 or beyond, you're striving to get above that 700 marker threshold. You can actually look for credit cards that have kind of lowered the barrier and actually are publicly acknowledged to be available for people with fair credit. One stands out to me, the Capital One Quicksilver One Cash Rewards credit card. There's also a lot of credit cards that are actually noted as secured credit cards, which basically mean that your credit limit is tied to an amount of money that you actually have in the card. And this is a great option for people that build credit. I actually wanted to say it's useful if you're talking about this more holistically, not what card can I get, but how do I get a better credit score? It's probably worth just a couple minutes talking about what goes into building your credit score. Because to your point, you were saying, you know, it's probably not optimal to apply for a card and get a 9, but it's also not the end of the world if you're just testing it. I mean, and this kind of goes to how people view their credit and why people get really freaked out. Well, if I apply for all these credit cards, is my score going to get tanked? And it is true that when you apply for a credit card, there's a hard pull. They check your social security number. They check your credit. They approve you or deny you. And that pull, that request, costs you a couple points temporarily on your credit score. So if you're at a 700, you go to 698. If you're at a 788, you go to a 786. Not the end of the world. In fact, that's actually, in many cases, outweighed by the fact that so many other factors go into it, like the age of your credit. Have you had one credit card that you have had forever and it just sits in your drawer? Keep that card. Don't get rid of that card. You know, I mean, in fact, this is one funny thing. When you pay off your student loans, this long balance that you've had outstanding, it's been sitting on your credit, had it for 10 years, you pay it off. Suddenly that's gone, which reduces the average length of your credit history. That's a weird little nuance there, but it's things like that. Your utilization rate. So if you have a $100 secured credit, you have a $100 on your account, you can draw up to $100 on this card, use it to pay for gas and groceries. Your utilization is really, really high on this card. Conversely, what you find is the credit card companies will up your limit over time as your credit actually goes up. And at some point, you might find that you have a $5,000 limit, a $20,000 limit. And I've heard one person say, no, don't give me more. But the counterpoint to that is with utilization, if you have a $20,000 or $30,000 utilization rate and you never use it, or you use it for a couple hundred dollars a week or a couple hundred dollars a month, something like that, your utilization is so absurdly low that it actually weighs in favor of your credit score. So that's why you find that people that have pursued travel rewards or using credit card travel rewards to travel the world for free, over time, they end up with credit scores hovering in the upper 700s to low 800s because the additional factors so far outweigh the, you know, incidental 2-point hard pull penalty. And so that, you know, I think there's a couple additional factors that maybe I didn't mention. I try to be as comprehensive as I could have when I'm ad-libbing it. But I mean, that is kind of to give you a look at what you can actually do. So again, kind of final thoughts on that. If you cannot get approved for your card of your choice, to Brad's point, pick a different card, get started, start building your credit history. Credit history is valuable. Get started today. And if you need to use a secured card, look for a secured card. That's a perfectly reasonable place to start. Start building your credit history. And two, another option here is become an authorized user. So if your spouse or partner has a credit card, they can add you as an authorized user and you can actually start building your credit history through theirs. And so that's just kind of a couple different ways that you can go about it. But I really do think it's important not to have dashes for your credit score. Regardless of your dogma and how much you hate credit cards, if that's the way that you felt at some point in time, credit is how this economy works. And at some point in time, you'll be happy that you have a very good credit score. So I don't know, Brad, I try to be pretty comprehensive there.
No, that was very, very impressive. And yeah, speaking of travel rewards, I actually just booked a pretty cool little weekend trip for Laura and myself. So you and I and some of the Choose of I team, we're headed down to pop-up business school that Alan Donegan's putting on in Charleston, South Carolina in February, which should be awesome. Laura and I are taking the liberty of kind of tacking on a little trip ourselves down to Savannah, Georgia. And we have the Hyatt credit card. It gives you at anniversary date, it gives you a free hotel night in a category 1 through 4 Hyatt hotel. If you spend some amount of money throughout the year, I'm not sure precisely what it was, I think it's $30,000 on the card, you get another free night. So long story short is Laura had 2 free night certificates. And from those points she earned, she had well over 15,000 points, okay? So what we did was we knew we wanted to take a 3-night trip. And of course, being the optimizers we are, we tried to find like the best category 4 Hyatt hotel that we could. We've been meaning to go down to Savannah, and that's pretty close to Charleston. It's about 1.5 hour or 2-hour drive. And there is the Hyatt's kind of chic brand called the Andaz. So there's an Andaz Charleston, and Laura and I have stayed in an Andaz in New York City, and it's phenomenal. It's just a really, really cool hotel. So we figured it was going to be category 5, 6, or even 7 for Hyatt, but it was actually a category 4, which is amazing, which means those free night certificates, which normally they're limiting you to, you know, a Hyatt Place or Hyatt House or some such that's a Cat 4 or lower. The Andaz Savannah actually fits into that. So we were able to take the 2-night certificates and then use only 15,000 points for the 3rd night. So yeah, this is turning into a 3-night luxury vacation for $0, which is not too shabby.
Brad, you mentioned pop-up. It has long been one of our goals to make it to a pop-up. So Alan Donegan is a great friend of the podcast and it's been on the show multiple times. And really, if you think about FI as turning personal finance on its head, what pop-up has done, what Alan is doing is just taking this idea, this business model that you have to go massively into debt, that you have to have this very extensive business plan, that you have to go to business school, all these different things in order to have a business, just flipping that on its head. And pop-up is the ultimate illustration of that. It's a 2-week pop-up event, and for lack of a better definition, they set up in a strip mall and they actually have participants from the local area come in that are interested in learning how to start a business. And over a 2-week period of time, in this case, it's February 17th through the 28th in Charleston, South Carolina. We'll have the link in the show notes. They, by the end of that 2-week period, have not only started their business, but made their first sale. And we finally are getting the opportunity to go down there and join him for this event. Maybe a few of you will want to join us as well. So I just want to let y'all know about that. But I mean, pop-ups are, this is going to be amazing.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited. And yeah, this is a free event to attend. Mm. Obviously, it is a 2-week commitment. That's significant. But yeah, this is really something we're looking forward to.
And I guess to tie that to travel rewards, if you want to use travel rewards to get there for free or start planning your own trip in the future, we actually have a free travel course. And it is a phenomenal free course that you can access at chooseify.com/travel. It'll take you through the basics of what we just talked about today and actually get you on the path to booking that first trip. So let's go ahead and switch gears. I want to talk a little bit about financial intimacy, financial communication. It's really, there's 2 parts to this. One is to bring our feedback in from this wonderful episode with Gretchen Rubin. which really, it was not intended. I mean, while it's useful to be able to identify characteristics in yourself, I certainly was able to see some pattern. I think it's actually more useful to see the tendencies in others and realize that when you are pursuing financial independence, you have to get buy-in. You have to get buy-in. And the way that you present this information will have a significant impact on the success of that communication, the success of that buy-in. And so if you can recognize that people act predictably in certain ways when they're presented it, for instance, you break out your spreadsheets, they close their eyes and scream inside, you know, but you ask them what their vision is, whatever, what they want out of life, and suddenly you get a little more buy-in. If you can find out more what someone's personality is, what their tendencies are, it actually helps you get out of your own way, your own bias for how you want to be presented information, and find out something that you could, that will help you achieve this common goal together. And I thought Gretchen kind of helped us lay the groundwork for that.
Yeah. And Jonathan, I think anytime you can get a greater level of understanding and empathy for how other people go through life, I think that's a really good thing. I know I've found this by reading the 5 love languages in the last year or two, and by reading this book by Gretchen, The 4 Tendencies. And I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, and I don't know that we ever tied a thread to it. And it's, as you know, I hate when we have these open loops, but I said that while I was reading this book, I had this interaction with a friend of mine. And normally I would have walked away saying like, wow, he's kind of gone off the deep end. I don't know like what's going on with him. Like I don't understand that reaction. But having literally just read about these tendencies, not only did I not walk away shaking my head, but I actually had a conversation with him about it at the time. And it was one of those eye-opening experiences. So basically we're just having this random innocuous conversation about like the kids. Our kids are in the same class, and they had a field trip. It was one of those where parents who wanted to volunteer to go on the field trip, it was limited to just a couple of parents per class because there were space limitations. You know, to my mind, it was, okay, those are the rules. My wife, Laura, and I volunteer for these field trips all the time. And in this case, Laura tried to get to be one of the volunteers, and she couldn't. They already had filled the spots, and that was that. My friend here had also applied, and man, was he furious that he didn't get selected. And not that it just simply that he didn't get selected. It was the arbitrariness of the rules. He's like, man, I have half a mind. You can't tell me that I can't go on the field trip. It's my kid's field trip. It's an open museum. I can just go down there and, oh, I just happen to be at the museum. And, you know, he's going through all this stuff. And I'm thinking like, wow, this is the questioner. This is so arbitrary to him. And whereas I looked at it saying like, dude, they let you volunteer when there are instances where there's plenty of space and there's no issue. The school doesn't come up with random rules. There's a limit of space. But to him, it was just how arbitrary it was. And he was just really ticked off about it. So I would have walked away and just kind of had a little joke with Laura about it. And that would have been that. But I actually said to him, like, you know, I'm reading this book. And I have to say, like, this is what my internal response to this would have been. But now I have this deeper level of empathy. It was this great conversation. And he walked away saying, I'm going to grab that book from the library. You know, when these things spread, they really do spread person by person. And I would highly advise everybody to read this book for that purpose alone, is just going through life and understanding people better. And really, Jonathan, the 5 love languages is another one that I cannot recommend highly enough. If you're in any type of relationship, just as a human being, if you have friends, family members, significant others, understanding the 5 love languages is crucial for me.
Awesome. Well, we will come back to the 5 love languages in a future episode, I am sure. What I'd like to do, actually, MK, I know we got some significant feedback on this episode. It was a different type of episode. You know, I think that's one of the things about the show is we try to tackle this from different ways, holistically, right? I mean, we're going to look at it from the math. We're going to look at it from a story. We're going to look at it from mindset. We're going to look at it from a relationship component, from a communication component. We try to hit this from different angles to really make sure that you have a well-rounded approach to this path that you're carving out for yourself. And I think some of the, you know, a lot of the feedback that we get now, MK, comes through you. And I'd love to hear, you know, your thoughts on this episode.
Well, the great thing about this episode is it was really spurred by feedback that we got from one of our community members, Liz. She came to us with, I really love this model. I am so curious to find out, what is the percentage of upholders, questioners, obligers, and rebels in the Phi community? Because she was saying, well, I think maybe we might be higher to one than another, or are we an even spread of what you would see over the entire population? Is there something about our community where we're all really good at being upholders because we are very good at sticking to our guns when it comes to saving and investing, or are we all rebels because we're just saying we're going to do what we want, we're leaving the workforce early and you can't make us stay, or are we all questioners because we keep researching and finding things? So this was a really great interview. I know, Brad, you had read the book prior to this, but it definitely introduced me to the concept. So a big thank you to Liz for kicking this off and bringing this to our attention and bringing it to our community. That was awesome.
Yeah, and Elizabeth wrote me an email after the episode and said how much she loved it, that she said, I'm really glad you asked her about the post-Phi challenges that obligers encounter. That revelation alone, that if you are an obliger, it's not your stressful job that keeps you from pursuing your interests. It's the lack of external accountability could be life-changing for a lot of listeners. She said, it was so fun to hear Gretchen's rapid-fire ideas on ways to motivate people of different tendencies, and just great content. So yeah, huge, huge thank you to Elizabeth for getting the ball rolling with this in the first place.
Yeah, it was an amazing episode. And I'm so excited to see people in the Facebook group throughout our community talking about, well, this is my tendency, this is my tendency, or, oh my gosh, I thought my spouse was just being stubborn, but I just need to communicate this way. We're no longer stuck. So that would be awesome to see positive coming from it. And then we actually had another Elizabeth, very popular name, reach out to us. She listened to the episode. She loved it. And she says, hey, from the UK, I love the episode. She wants to second the recommendation that Gretchen made for A Pattern Language, which is another really great book. But she also recommended Hotspots by Linda Grafton, all about the magic chemistry of getting on with people in different situations. It goes back to the fact that this community is all about learning, continuous learning, continuous growth and development. Those of us in Phi never really stop challenging ourselves, never stop pushing to learn more. And these different books, these different frameworks for communicating can really help us as we continue to evolve in our relationships with our spouses and our partners and our kids and in the workplace or our side hustles or businesses that we create. So it's really exciting to see this all come together and get people talking about it.
Yeah, I think one of my things for people is if you are trying to take this idea, you've been listening to the show, you've been binge listening to all the episodes, you get it, you want to do this, and you're taking this home to a partner, spouse, friend, you know, you're trying to get some buy-in from your support structure. My challenge to you would be to really think about who this person is and what their personality traits are and how they're best going to receive these ideas, you know? And so Gretchen, like you were pointing out, MK, this rapid fire approach to saying, all right, for this, you're going to want to do this. For this, you're going to want to do this. Like you're going to need to slow down probably. You're going to need to be a little bit tactical about this. You know, if your spouse, partner, if they're a questioner, just following the tendencies that we laid out, they're going to want to see the data, right? It's going to be data driven. I'll do it, but it needs to make sense. So that spreadsheets are your friend, right? Give them that path. If you have an upholder, they're probably already on board. It's a very, very easy conversation. And then that leaves you with these other two tendencies, the obliger and the rebel. The rebel's challenging. Like it's really, really challenging. And so the rebel says, I do what I want. I got to want to do it. Right. So in that case, you're waiting for them to give you an opening. You're not just going to them randomly. You know, you're asking them to tell you what it is that they want out of life. And then you're helping them figure out a way to get there. And you probably need to wait for them to start the conversation. But as soon as they do, and Gretchen was saying this, and she makes a note in your book, I don't care if it's a Thursday at 11 p.m. when they give you the opening on their terms, that's when you go for it. And you think about it in terms of their terms. You don't want the boss telling you what to do. You don't want all the constraints that come with this, you know, this 9-to-5 lifestyle. You help create it in their terms. So it's not always the same thing. It's not always discipline equals freedom, right?
It works for upholders, that's for sure.
For upholders, great. And then for obligers, that external accountability. There's a way to mold that, but that's going to be a different conversation than it is with the rebel. And so that's where the community aspect is really big. Knowing that you're on the journey with other people is going to be a really big part of this. And I find that as well. I mean, you were talking about this in finance. It's so easy to see about this in fitness. Like that example that she mentioned where she's talking to her friend and the friend said, I would do anything that the coach in high school told me to do, but I can't force myself to do anything. You know, if that is you, there's a way to actually create that, artificially create that in whatever aspect of life that you're looking to get results in. And so does that mean a personal trainer, a group fitness class? Does it mean an accountability group where you're showing up and you're reporting your numbers, you know, that you've been saving this amount? There's all sorts of way to craft this to get the results you need. And the point of this was never to get you to be someone that you're not, you know, never to get you to artificially force yourself to become an upholder. Oh gosh, it sounds so great to be an upholder. I should be one of the, you're never going to be it. It's never going to happen. So instead, figure out who you are already and then make it easier to succeed with that tendency in mind. All right, so I actually wanted to switch gears. We actually brought Larry Hagner off from the Dad Edge podcast to come on the show and discuss with us financial intimacy. Now, the context for this is obviously this whole show, this whole episode, this week, we're talking about the idea of communication. In this case, Larry has dedicated himself to becoming a better father, a better husband, doing a better job communicating with the spouse, and helping his alliance, this group of men that are also passionate about doing better with their finances, doing better with their faith, doing better with their fitness, doing better with these different aspects of their life, helping them also talk about communication and communications and finance with their spouse. And so when he found Choosify through Brad and started listening to it, it was a force of change for his life. It made him realize, even though he was doing so well in so many other areas of his life, he used a term, which you'll hear me reference in the segment we pre-recorded. He used a technique called delegation through abdication. He just got out of the way. He didn't want to look at it. And came back after realizing he couldn't afford to just avoid these conversations. It's unfair to his family, unfair to his spouse to do that. He was now communicating with her, and there's some growing pains involved. I think for those of us that are in the trenches and are having to have get this buy-in or trying to have these types of conversation, this is going to be a valuable use of your time. And so with that, let's go ahead and play the segment. We're actually going to get the opportunity to talk about financial intimacy, and we're going to do this through the lens of Larry Hagner, the host of the ultra popular podcast and website, The Good Dad Project. Brad and myself, huge fans of what he's doing over there and how he's working with men one-on-one and really helping them cultivate their best life now. One of the things that Larry does exceptionally well is diving into this concept, this idea of financial intimacy and how it's lacking in so many marriages and the statistics that come from that lack of financial intimacy. Very excited to really have this conversation.
Yeah, it is no secret that I am a huge fan of Larry's The Dad Edge podcast. It is one of my absolute go-tos each week. I've had the good fortune of being on his show a couple of times. What's cool is that Larry and his wife have taken these FI concepts to heart since we got introduced about 18 months ago. So I'm curious here for an update on what's going on with their own financial life. And then to hear Larry talk about financial intimacy. So Larry, with that, welcome back.
It's good to be back. And dude, this studio, what?
Yeah.
Sick. This is sick.
It's amazing what a green fern will do for your life.
Right.
Before we talk about the financial intimacy, I'm actually curious, when you take a look at, you know, Brad was mentioning kind of introducing this idea, this concept of financial independence to you and kind of having you kind of ruminate on it and incorporate it into your own life, and not just into your own life as an individual living this, but in the construct of a family and a relationship. When we say this idea kind of ruminated and you guys have actually made some significant progress as a result of it, what does that look like practically?
Oh yeah. Here's what that looks like. So I'll share with you the beginning of my marriage with Jessica. So I think just to start off, I think all of your listeners probably have some sort of emotional baggage that's associated with finances. I think we all do, you know, and that probably makes what our money personality really is. We can either be a spender, we can be a saver, we can be a non-risk taker, super conservative, all these different things. But a lot of it boils down to an emotion that you had, I think, associated with the childhood. So I'll share this story. It's tough for me to share, but I'll share it. I will never forget when I was about 15 years old. I didn't come from a lot of means. My mom was married a handful of times. She was married three times, dated several men in between. I'll never forget this one relationship that she had, because my entire childhood, I only remember us being financially stable until I was probably about seven or so. And it was probably between the age of five and seven. And I couldn't put my finger on it. But as I look back on it, my mom was married to that time a white collar worker. He did really well. My mom was able to quit her job. But I remember then after seven, you know, my dad lost his job. And then I just remember there was so much tension. There was so much animosity in the house. They ended up getting divorced. It's probably one of those statistics of 50% of marriages end in divorce. 70% of those divorces end because of finances. And I think that they were probably victim to that. My mom then got together with this other guy when I was about 14, and then they broken up when I was 15, but he moved in with us for a couple, I'm sorry, I was right around 13, because he moved in with us for about 2 years. My mom actually worked for him. He moved all of his furniture into our house. So we had a house of full of furniture. My mom worked for him. Well, his business went under. They ended up breaking up. He moved out. It was super ugly. And I'll never forget this. I came home from school one day and I found my mom in the middle of our family room floor crying with no furniture. And I was like, oh my God, like what's going on here? What's happening? And that image, man, I got to be honest, that image like stuck with me forever. And I've always had this relationship with money that no matter how much money I had, I just, it gave me so much anxiety to spend it or to pay bills, even though I've got great credit, I've paid every bill on time that I've ever had, but it gave me so much anguish and stress to spend money or to pay bills. So the first, my wife and I have been married for 16 years, the first 5 years of our marriage, I did the bills. And I was on the Dave Ramsey train. We had $80,000 in debt, 60 in student loans, about 20, 22-ish in a car. And I just went after that debt with fury, up to the point where it created a lot of tension and stress in my marriage. So my wife didn't really like the fact when she would come to me on a Friday, be like, hey, I'm going to the grocery store. How much money do you have in the checking account? I'm like, oh, we got $32. But hey, we just paid off one student loan. And that like freaked her out. So what we did was, is she knew my stress. I really like investing. So she's like, look, I don't have the emotional baggage you do. And I think I can handle cash flow better. Why don't you let me take over the bills and you handle our investments? And I was like, yeah, sure. Okay, that's fine. And she did. She's like, I know we'll bounce back. I know we got this coming in, that coming in. But I buried my head in the sand. Like I wouldn't even go to our checking account and see the balance. Like didn't matter how much was in there. I was like, oh my gosh, we're gonna run out of money. So after Brad came on, I was like, you know what? If there's one thing I've learned from Brad and Choose FI is, man, you can't bury your head in the sand and allow one person in the marriage to handle the bills. Like that's just, and no matter what situation you're in, whether it's good or bad, you just can't do that. And I did that for so long. So I was like, you know what? From now on, it's going to be a weekly discussion every Sunday night. We're just going to talk. And that in and of itself, and I'm happy to talk about that too, when it comes to financial intimacy, what kind of energy you bring to that particular conversation. Because no matter what position you're in financially, like that conversation can go south when stressors start to show up and things like that. But that was one thing I learned in particular. I also learned the importance of a budget and being very intentional with knowing exactly where your money's at. We run our household kind of like a business. You know, we have a P&L, we have expenses, we have income, that kind of thing. The other thing that I've really learned from you guys is, and it was such an aha moment, and I'm so honored and blessed that I learned this from you guys, is experiences over stuff. And I'm happy to talk about that as well.
Well, there's so much there. And thank you for being so generous and sharing that story. I think that's really helpful for our audience to kind of get a sense for, you know, your background and how that actually comes into your money story and how you're in. I think so many of us just say, well, it just is what it is. It's so simple. We should just save more, whatever. Not realizing like the history that's coming into building this personality and these characteristics that we have with regards to our money. And certainly in your situation, you can understand now with that context, which a stranger may not have, the scarcity mindset. We need to, you know, out of fear, we're making these actions as opposed to out of outrageous optimism for the future. If I were going to kind of, you know, guide this conversation just a little bit, I'm curious, you're having weekly conversations with your spouse about money. And you've, to this point, you have 16 years, 15 years, 14 years of burying your head in the sand. One thing that I heard you say in there was that, you know, you can't afford to bury your head in the sand. You need to be involved. But at the same point, there is a delegation of duties. It is realistic for one individual to then take ownership of an aspect of the financial picture. How did you find that balance point between getting your head out of the sand, but at the same point, recognizing she's been doing an incredible job with this?
So that's a great question and a loaded question in that, because there still has been a lot of learnings. I think when you poke your head out of the sand and you're like, oh, so this is what's going on, and nothing alarming, right? It's just like, okay, so I've been out of the loop here for a while. But the one thing that I noticed when I would come to these conversations with her weekly was I brought that baggage and that stressed energy, no matter how much money we had. Like when I saw money going out, I would get like well, you know, we can't spend this much money on groceries. Like, we've got to get control over that. Like, is there any way we cannot spend that much money on groceries? Like, that was one thing that kind of freaked me out, because we're super frugal with everything else. Like, we don't have a car payment. We don't believe in buying new cars. We do spend money on the kids' sports or music lessons, that kind of thing, because we feel that's important. But that I brought that energy to that meeting, and I was like, okay, I need some coaching on how to bring better energy to this meeting. So what I did really started to learn a couple other tactics. And one of those things is, this is just not with financial, but with every conversation, whether that's with your kids, somebody you work with, your boss, your spouse, friends, you have to bring an element of curiosity and appreciation to every conversation, because the person that you're about ready to have this conversation with, whatever they're doing, it makes total sense to them why they're doing it. So one of the worst things we can do is come in with a super, maybe, and even if we don't mean it that way, maybe we don't have the intention of coming in defensive, like guns blazing, but we're curious, but we don't know how to present ourselves as curious. And when we come off aggressive, I really had to be a better student of asking really good questions and not asking the question why. So, like, for instance, if I ask my wife, like, why are you spending so much money at the grocery store? Even though I want to know why, that question, when you talk about financial intimacy, anytime you're asked, hey, Brad, why are you doing that? Or Jonathan, why do you feel that way? There's a part of us that's like, wow, that kind of stings a little bit. But when you say, hey, Brad, I really understand your point of view. Tell me more about that. Or instead of asking my wife, hey, why are you buying this stuff at the grocery store? I'd be like, oh, I didn't know we were buying so many snacks. Tell me about that. How many snacks are the kids eating these days? You know, and I'd get the same answer that I was looking for if I was like, why are we buying so much stuff?
Yeah, Larry, that quote, that whatever they are doing makes total sense to them. That is probably one of the most deep things I've ever heard. And it really transcends finances, right? Like, whenever you look at someone, you're like, what the heck are they doing?
Right?
Like, they must be an idiot. Or you come up with all these like grumble type things, right? But people clearly aren't going through their life trying to do something stupid. So you have to put yourself in their shoes. I love that. And I want to take a step back and say, these Sunday conversations, do you guys have a format to them? Have you come up with some methodology? Like, you've been doing this for a while now. Best practices. Because I suspect there are going to be people who are going to listen to this and say, I need to do that. I need to have a weekly or biweekly meeting. What have you found that actually works well?
I really love doing like our investments. You know, we invest in some real estate. We invest in, you know, stock market, mutual funds, all these. And hey, by the way, thank you for the lesson learned on the low cost index funds. I believe it's, I can't remember. I've invested in it.
Nice.
Wow. But it's the low cost.
Yeah.
VTSAX. Like, in fact, keeping it as vanilla as possible is probably best, you know. It's just low cost broad-based index funds. And we all have our favorites.
So there's another lesson learned from Choose FI. So thank you for that. But the other thing too is, so since I'm more like, hey, I really like, there's a couple things that I do on a weekly basis. I go in and look at our entire financial snapshot, everything that we have in the business, everything we have personally, retirement, real estate, all these different things. And I literally give a snapshot of that every single week of where we're at. Hey, here's where we've grown. Here's what we're doing. Here's what we've saved. It's kind of weird, right? But I am actually in charge of the YNAB budgeting software. So I see all the bills being paid. I'm seeing what we're putting, you know, groceries and all that other stuff. My wife is just sort of out there. She's purchasing the things. She's paying the bills, that kind of thing. So my job on Sundays is to come to her and be like, you know, hey, here's where we're at with the budget. It's week two. We've used about 60% of our groceries. So just FYI there, we might want to just, you know, if you see something that we don't necessarily, you know, need, or see something that we want, but we actually need it, grab it. But if we don't need it, maybe push it off to next month. So we communicate there. We also have a discussion around, so I present the budget. She presents what we have going on left. Like, so for instance, like right now, we just took my 6-year-old to the ER. I'm expecting a freaking big bill in February. So that's something that I'll have to put into the budget, and she'll be like, hey, we just got this bill. Okay, let me move some things around. So I'm the analytical budget person. She's the spender. I inform her. She also obviously is in charge of like our social calendar, and she knows when birthdays are coming up, or she knows when events are coming up. And she's like, hey, we told so-and-so, you know, we'd go out to dinner with them. And so just to let you know, restaurant budget, that kind of thing, here's what's coming up. And that's how we do it. So it's pretty simple. It lasts probably 30 minutes. But there's one element that we're going to start adding here in 2020, and that is helping our kids invest. So one thing I've started doing is I open up my entire financial portfolio to my 13-year-old, my 12-year-old. So they know how much money we have. They know how much money we save. And the lesson there is, here's how much mom and dad save every month. You know, this is a discipline. So, you know, this is important. And this is why. So they're getting those lessons and that exposure now. My 12-year-old has written a book, so he's got income coming in from that. So one lesson we're going to teach him is, I actually, here in a month, I've got a meeting with a good friend of mine who's a financial advisor. We're just going to open up a small little account for him. So getting him in the due diligence and the process of teaching them about saving is something we're doing here this year.
Actually, I've been reading a book, Michael Gerber's E-Myth Revisited. I'm sure you've read it, but if you haven't, if you're a small business owner or aspiring small business owner, check it out. There's something you said earlier that came to mind, and I think it's applicable here. It's in the context of this book, it was really talking about the small business owner, but basically it was delegation through abdication, right? So in your case, I got afraid to look at it. I didn't want to handle it. But you take it on. So you delegated, but you delegated by not looking at it. The counterpoint though is, you know, if you don't look at it too long and then things go off the rails, and we can talk about this in the small business, but clearly there's parallels. Things go off the rails and you realize, wow, things have gone off the rails. And now suddenly you're back and you're taking it back on. The risk is, if especially you, obviously you're coming in and you're now letting these individuals know that you lean on, that you don't trust the work that they've been doing, especially if you don't go into this conversation with a strategy. And then you're like, well, I'm the only person that can do this. I'm the only. And so you take it all back. And then as soon as the individuals in a small business, or maybe in this case, talking about a relationship, a much smaller conversation, realize they just give it back to you. And now you're back right where you start, except you're convinced in your soul that you are the only person that can handle this. You clearly indicated that there was some strategy in the way that you asked your questions, but actually having your wife, having Jessica realize that this is a good thing, as opposed to a lack of trust, or as opposed, like, I'm putting this in the context of someone in our audience is listening to this. Maybe their spouse, their partner has been the one that has been taking care of things for years and years. And finally, this individual is convinced that they want to get involved. They want to pull their head out of the sand. They go running back to that conversation with all these ideas that they want to implement in 2020 and beyond. We're going to do this. And then suddenly they run up against that brick wall. How did Jessica feel when you brought this to her? And did she buy into this vision? And was there an acknowledgement that it's better when you're doing this together?
I think in some ways she was relieved that she was not the only one doing bills. And I think in some ways she was relieved because, I mean, you talk about a lot of trust. You know, she's basically saying, hey, I trust you because in 30 years, I trust that you have invested enough that we're okay. That's a huge trust factor right there. I will say this though, right? And this is going back to financial intimacy. There was some stress that she knew that I was coming back into it, because she was like, you get so wigged out over this stuff. Like, I don't want this to create any tension between us. Like, I've got this. I've had this for 10 years. I don't want you to be stressed out about it. And if this is going to turn into something bad, you know, I don't necessarily know if I want you in on this. So there was that there. And that's where I kind of had to go, because our first couple meetings, that 15-year-old kid in me drummed up, you know, it did. And, you know, we're human beings. And I view myself as a lifelong learner. I'm a student. And I needed to understand, like, okay, how do I communicate with my wife about finances? And the big, anytime I bring my laptop into that kitchen and we talk, it's, I'm going into this conversation stress-free with curiosity and appreciation for her doing the hard work, paying the bills, paying everything on time, taking care of everything, going to the grocery store, taking care of these kids. And that is what I'm going to focus on today. And the numbers are the numbers. And we will talk through what the rest of the month or the future holds for us.
And when you're both in the meeting, you have the laptop, y'all have the appointed time, you both bought into the vision, but something has gone wrong. The numbers didn't work. You weren't able to invest as much as you wanted. She wasn't able to spend as much in this particular area as she felt like the kids needed or you needed as a family, but there's conflict. In the context of financial intimacy, how is that resolved? Maybe in an ideal situation and practically?
That's a good question. I'll share this with you, and this will probably blow the doors off you guys, because I know, Brad, you came on our show, and I'm like, dude, how do I save money on groceries? I can't figure it out. These four kids won't stop eating, and they're boys, and they're all growing. And we spend more in groceries than we do on our mortgage, which blows my mind. But my kids are, they're not overweight. They're all athletic. They all eat. The one thing that we've always invested in and we view as a high quality investment is healthy food. And healthy food is not cheap. If you ask the CEO of Whole Foods, healthy food is cheap because the cost of buying unhealthy food wreaks havoc on your body and mind and spirit and everything else later on. So the reason Whole Foods can charge, you know, $50 a bag of groceries when you leave there is because it's an investment. But I'll talk to my wife about the money that she spends at Target and then the money she spends at the grocery store. And again, it's nothing that's out of the ordinary. She's not like buying clothes and ridiculous things we don't need. It's like literally things that we need. And I'm just like, Jess, is there any way we can cut corners on these grocery bills? Like, it's just a lot of money. And she looked at me and she's like, you know, I'll cut coupons. I have, you know, the Target app or whatever, which saves me so much every time I go in there. I don't buy anything that we don't need. Everything that I'm buying, the kids are eating. They're eating healthy. They're eating somewhat majority of the time healthy food. She's like, Larry, it just kind of is what it is right now. And if you are uncomfortable with how much we're spending at the grocery store, perhaps let's look at the other categories and take from there. And that was tough for me to hear. But at the same time, like, I even went to my dad about this. And I was like, I can't believe how much my family's eating, man. There's just a lot. Like, how did you guys feed your boys? Because I didn't grow up with him. How did you guys feed your boys growing up? And he looked at me. He goes, we just did. We bought them what they needed. The grocery bill is the grocery bill. It's kind of like your mortgage. If you are choosing to eat healthy, you just have to live with it. You can go and feed them mac and cheese all day long if that's what they're going to eat. I don't think that's what you're, that's not part of what you want to do and part of your core values. So if you're going to continue, you know, if it's your priority to feed them healthy foods, then you're probably going to spend a little more. So it's been lessons like that, that I'm like, okay, you know, it's not going to be like this forever. I'm not going to have four kids in the house forever. So, and this is important to me. So I have to make that sacrifice and I have to reduce my stress when it comes to that. And I know that we're just doing the best that we possibly can in that category.
Last question here that I had for you in the context of financial intimacy, and that is when the hard conversations are had and they're being done consistently in a spirit of absolute trust, where it's not always going to go perfect, but we're on this team together and we're driving towards a common cause, a common goal. What comes out of that? You know, what's the payoff for having that?
You know, finances is a foundational element in a marriage. If it wasn't, 70% of the divorces wouldn't be what they are because of finances. So it's very important. But when you have a few different things, trust, transparency, if you can come to every conversation with appreciation and curiosity and understand some rules when it comes to communication, like not asking the question why, but instead of replacing that with, tell me more. Things like that, that's going to keep that conversation on the offense and not on the defense. The other thing that I'll share with you too is when we're able to look at our finances and if we're going through a tough month and we together make decisions that fully serve our mission, even if some decisions are tough, like, hey, well, you know, this came up. So how are we going to handle that? What category are we going to take from? And it's a we decision, not of like, oh, I'm doing the budget, so I guess I'll make this call. It feels more of a team collaboration feel to it, which if you look at love languages like quality time, acts of service, words of affirmation, anything that has to do with an action, you know, those are actions that are collaborative, which brings a couple together. And when a couple is together, making even tough decisions together, stressful decisions together, but you did it together, that increases that intimacy. And I'm not talking about sex or anything physical, but the intimacy that, hey, we got this. We're shoulder to shoulder. We're arm in arm. We're doing this together. And that creates a tremendous amount of positive energy in the relationship.
Larry, thanks so much for coming on. One quote you said in here is maybe the best way to approach marriage in general, not less these meetings, which is you approach it stress-free with curiosity and appreciation. And I really want to make sure the audience hears that. That is just such good advice for life. So thank you very much.
Larry, someone's listening to this and they want to go a little bit further. They want to spend a little bit more time researching, you know, how do I develop this financial intimacy or become a better partner for my spouse and start to build this common vision together? What is the best way for someone to find you and connect with your content?
So you can find everything we're doing at gooddadproject.com. The podcast has got a different name. Obviously, as Brad said, it's called the Dad Edge Podcast. It's been around for 5 years. We have an absolute arsenal of information. We've got a dad mastermind. You can find information about that at gooddadproject.com/alliance. It's called the Dad Edge Alliance Mastermind Community. So you can find me there and you can find the podcast literally anywhere and everywhere. Do you mind if I share one final thought with you guys?
Go for it, man.
I just want to talk to your listeners here for a second. You guys in the audience, obviously everyone is huge Choose FI advocates, listeners, fans. And I just want to let you guys know, I've gotten to know Jonathan and Brad on a personal level. And these guys are golden. As you've already known, I mean, and these guys aren't paying me to say this. They didn't even know I was going to say this. But these guys are truly, truly amazing. And the content that they bring you guys, the strategies that they bring you guys, truly comes from the most amazing, heartfelt place. And they truly care for people's livelihood, for their happiness, stress-free relationships. And a lot of that comes out of the decisions that we make financially. So I just want to take a moment and thank you both for what you do and just recognize you for that.
Thank you, Larry. Yeah, let's.
That means a lot, Larry. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. We'll see you next time.
All right.
So Brad, there's a bunch here. And actually, I think this is a really wonderful opportunity for us to kind of dissect and really take out our takeaways inside the episode with Larry. And I guess we'll start with really the heartbeat of it, which was financial intimacy. The statistic he mentioned is absolutely shocking. What percentage of marriages just fall apart, relationships fall apart due to money problems, money issues? This is what we're talking about here each and every day to recognize that and then figure out how to bridge that gap.
Yeah, I think this is what we talk about a lot here at Choosify, that especially I know with my relationship with my wife, pursuing financial independence has made us closer, has made us stronger as a couple and as a family for many, many reasons. It goes without saying that by having money in the bank, we can weather storms, right? We talked about this at the top of the episode with getting a $5,000 medical bill. For most people, the stress of that would be enormous. So clearly by saving money, it puts us in a position where the stress is just simply not there. But really along the path, I've found that it has brought us closer together because we act as a team. It's us going through life as a team trying to win. So yeah, the entirety of this is adversarial and not looking at life and partnership as teamwork, as a long-term process. And Jonathan, you and I have been reading a book called The Infinite Game by Simon Sinek. And really, and we're going to talk about this at length, I suspect, and hopefully we can get Simon on the podcast in the near future. But it's looking at this situation, this adversarial way, as a finite game, as a I want to win, as opposed to I look at my relationship as an infinite game of how can we do this and make our lives better and our generations to come's lives better for hundreds and hundreds of years. So looking at it as a long-term process as opposed to just how can I win to get my more expensive golf clubs or something like that. I think pursuing the path to FI and really, like we always advise, is sitting down and talking through your money issues, talking through the baggage you have, talking through what are the goals you have for your lives. Just getting those conversations rolling, they can make an enormous difference.
I love how you wove in The Infinite Game. I think that's going to be one of my most influential business books of 2020. And so, yeah, we need to get connected with him this year for sure. But the fact that you tied that from a business book, which it is, the spillover effect to realize that life, which you could say with, you know, folk with a very, with blinders on that it's finite, you'd be wrong. This is an infinite game. Like you're not, this isn't something where, hey, when you hit your number, you're done. You know, whatever it takes to get there, you have to look at your life holistically and say that, no, you know, money in a vacuum without relationships, without family, without stuff, what is the point? And so, yeah, you could get rid of all of the cushion, all of the things that make life fun, get rid of all of the expenses that come with experiences with family. But this is an infinite game. And that would be very, very short-sighted of you. And so I think actually, as you kind of spill over, we see in this segment, we see Larry grappling with that blend of the two, you know, like he abdicates, his wife handles it. She does a good job. He looks up, his grocery bill is more than his mortgage. Four kids. Whew. And now he, and actually, I think probably this is that challenge point, right? Rather, this is actually a point of challenge for Larry. Larry's still figuring it out. He's having weekly budget meetings. You don't do a weekly budget meeting because you've got it all figured out. There's growing pains involved. And hopefully what you're really building is trust to start implementing change. I would say that, and this is kind of to push back a little bit on Larry, but also just kind of for our community to think about it. Let's say Larry went into his wife and said, you know what? That's silly. We should be doing $2 per person per meal. And at that rate, our grocery bill should be no more. I don't know, $600, $700, make up a number. And right now we're two or three times that. So, you know, that would be one approach, but I don't think it would go over that well. I really don't. Where Larry's at right now, I'm willing to set that aside for the health of my family and focus on the things that I can control, focus on investing, focus on saving, focus on earning more, focusing on cutting subscriptions in other places. I'm going to leave the grocery bill alone. I think it's reasonable, you know, in the spirit of building trust to not start there. I don't think it means that we need to leave that. You know, if that really is, if you have $1,800 a month going toward groceries to four individuals, I think there's room for optimization there. And I guess to push back a little bit, I would say that you could probably have a healthy diet that gives your boys and your family what they need. And you could probably find that food at somewhere other than Whole Foods. You know, that's certainly not the only grocery store in the country, but I don't think you need to start there when you're starting this conversation. This is a strategic game. This is an infinite game. It's not something that you need to win on week one.
That's an interesting point, certainly, about the food budget. And it may be a limiting belief on Larry's side. I mean, I think clearly they value healthy food, but I think is the only way to get healthy food at Whole Foods? I think the answer is obviously no. So I would push back. I know Larry's a listener of the podcast. Like, what would it look like to cut $200, $300, or $400 off your spending on groceries every month? What would that look like? If you take it as a challenge and say, all right, how could we do this? Then you see what happens. You see after the fact, after a month or two, all right, we still are eating in a healthy manner. And all six of us are doing extremely well. We're full. We're looking at this, again, as a game. Right? We're looking at this as a challenge. That's how Laura and I looked at it, right? So Laura has taken finding recipes, this art of finding recipes, to like the next level. She's constantly scouring all the magazines she gets, and she's always taking out recipe books from the library for free just to see if she's going to find that one thing that sounds absolutely delicious, has, let's say, a normal, and obviously that's kind of a loaded word, but a normal amount of ingredients. Because I think, Jonathan, that's where you can get in trouble with recipes, is there's some exotic spices that are going to cost you $7 to get.
I spent an hour and a half in a store one time looking for white pepper for this one recipe. Who the heck needs white ground pepper? Just use black pepper. I mean, after I thought, I really was worried I was going to ruin the recipe, so I was looking for it forever. And then after me, the recipe, I was like, I could have just used pepper. This is crazy. Now I have white pepper. It's the only thing I've ever heard.
but no, I mean, there's something to that, right? Just finding recipes that you know what you have in the house, or you know what you're going to reasonably use multiple times. Like, clearly, if there are spices that you're going to use again and again, then that's a recipe that you might want to buy that spice for and then use in the future, right? So thinking about it like that, as opposed to a one-off meal of, oh, just this one tiny little spice is going to cost me $5. Well, there goes your $2 per person per meal. That makes it virtually impossible. So yeah, Laura has been really curating these recipes for us. And we actually, at this point now, she has scanned 30 of these, Jonathan, into the Choose a Five vault. I know she's very proud of this. For a while there, I was getting on her about, oh, we only have 5 or 10 in there, but
30 feels respectable. 30 feels, of 50 is like pretty locked in.
Yeah, we're doing rather well.
Create a way for people to rate these on, you know, like, how do you number them? Like, best, or, you know, like on the 50, how would you rank 50? You know, something like that.
Oh, that would be cool. And they are numbered there, but they're not in number order. It's just the order with which I uploaded them, essentially.
That's really cool, dude. And I would even say, you know, tied to that. So anyways, you can access that. They are inside the vault, chooseify.com/vault. And they have their own folder there. You can see all 30 of them. And growing, at some point, it will get to 50, I am sure. You know, one thing you challenged me on last year when I was talking, I was looking at my grocery budget and I was looking at the variance. You know, one month I'd have a $200 grocery bill and then I'd have a $700 grocery bill. I'm like, man, what is my average grocery bill, right? You challenged me on cost of consumption. You know, that's the real measurement. Because if you can figure out cost of consumption, that drives everything else. And so I took that and we'll do a whole episode on it because I found a lot of amazing stuff. But this year I've been challenging myself with this. I've been eating a lot of similar foods that I love with some variants in there. You know, you have fresh fruits and fresh vegetables, different chicken and steak. It's not just all one thing. And I've been tracking that consumption and I've really come up with some very interesting data. But you don't really realize this, like grocery stores have a plan. It's not nefarious. It's not evil. It's just business, right? Some things in the grocery store are extraordinarily cheap and others are very, very expensive. And what happens over time is it's too complicated to track. So you just stop tracking. I just noticed something simple, like blueberries were 25 times when it comes to like grams, like it comes to carbohydrates, how many carbs you need a day, that sort of thing. We all need some amount, but just like on a per gram of carb basis, blueberries were 25 times more expensive than bananas. Now, not to say you eat all bananas or all blueberries, but just in terms of how, if you were deciding your carb source, an equal amount was going to come for blueberries as opposed to bananas. When you choose blueberries each day, you're making the choice to spend 25 times more for that carb source. Little things like that. And then you actually, well, what about apples? What about grapes? What about if I get some sort of variety in there? It's really interesting to know that sort of data and build a pattern around it. Another thing, blueberries at Wegmans. Wegmans has incredible deals on eggs. It's like they're giving them away. I mean, it's insane how inexpensive they are. Their blueberries, which by the way, just happen to be right when you walk in the store, are like 4 or 5 times more expensive than the ones at Costco, which are incredible quality at Costco. My wife said, well, the blueberries, don't they taste better? Well, maybe. Do they taste 4 or 5 times better? I don't know about that. You know, it's just kind of interesting. And as you start to track and look for these types of patterns, something becomes obvious. You can say, well, you know what? I'm not going to go to 6 or 7 store for 6 or 7 different things, but I might plan some of my bulk ingredient shopping. Let's say I knew the cost of the data for some of my core staples, things that we use each and every week. And I got my core from this shop. And then I supplement with 2 or 3 others that I know are a way better deal across the street. I mean, I guarantee you there's 20% savings in there. And that's kind of the way that I've started to think about. You put this pattern together and you put a lot of work in on the front end, but along the way, you start to realize what the top 20 items that you do eat each and every week are. And then you know what? If you're making a meal that has 30 ingredients in it, it's going to be a very expensive meal. If you look for meals that on average have 8 or 9 ingredients in it, it's probably going to be a fractional amount. Like there's ways to weave this in. It's not to say you never eat a meal that has 30 ingredients in it. That'd be crazy. But there's your staples in life. If you can anchor yourself to a few common sense staples that have reasonable budgets and allocation, you're going to end up being able to save 10 or 20%. You start building the structure that allows you to build bandwidth in your life, you know, or you don't, and you make a choice somewhere else. That's fine. But I never write off anything. You know, it's always like, what do we want to work on? If you can gamify this, if you can get buy-in, if you can get your spouse or partner on board and you do this from a fun place, it's all predicated on trust. If there's no trust, there's no point. It's not going to happen. It won't stick. You got to have the trust first, but then work towards this common goal together.
Hey, I totally agree. That's what Jason and I have been doing for years, you know, learning how to cook, learning how to work with the recipes, being more efficient. We live in Florida, so our blueberries are less expensive.
Buy in season. In Florida, it's always in season.
And you always send me these pictures of avocados for like 19 cents, and I'm very envious.
Absolutely. Every time I see them below 69 cents at Aldi, I always send them to Brad because I've decided that the avocados that are $1, those are Fat Fi avocados. Those are for the luxury people in our audience. Whereas, you know, the 39 cent avocados, that's lean fi. That's where we are. Yeah.
Virginia Fi, we'll call it.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited to be talking to you guys today. I feel so re-energized and so rejuvenated in my energy for Phi. I just got back from Camp Phi Southeast in Gainesville. And this is the same camp where we all actually met 4 years ago. And it's crazy to think how much has happened in 4 years. But Stephen always puts on such a great event. I was telling Jason on the way home, we've been in this community for 5, 6 years now. We've been pursuing our financial independence even longer than that before we knew what it was. And I guess I kind of forgot what that feeling was when you first find it and that excitement you feel. And after spending the weekend with so many people who are relatively new to Phi, who still have that excitement and that, oh my gosh, I need to learn everything energy, I definitely feel rejuvenated and excited to dive back in. There was a lot of really great conversation at the camp around the community that Stephen has built through these events by bringing people together. And some people that we know were there. So Vincent Puglisi from episode 59, Freelance to Freedom. He was there. He gave a great presentation, as did Christine, who was on episode 137 talking about her amazing business growth with her food tour company in Nashville and how that really started at one of the camps. Awesome. And people coming together and challenging her. And of course, Cody was there with Justin to talk about the FI show. And Cody was on episode 83. It was so great to see everybody. Josh Overmeyer, who's one of our big supporters of everything that goes on in the community, was there. And so it was really amazing to see that. But there were so many people there that were new to FI and that were actually closer to regular retirement age saying, you know, I'm stuck. What's next? I'm stuck on how to find things to do with my spouse when we have all this free time, or how do you keep going once you're done with work. So it was a really exciting weekend and I feel energized to bring you guys a lot more. And one question I did get several times over the weekend was about pensions. And then I came home and I had something in the Choose My inbox about pensions as well. So to answer Drew's question about, can you please do some content around pensions? Well, good news, Drew, is that we actually recorded an episode with Grumpus Maximus way back in the first year of the podcast, episode 57. And Grumpus Maximus is definitely known as the expert on all things pension or defined benefit plan.
He calls it the golden albatross.
Yes, the decision of do you stay or do you go? And he has put out amazing content. It would be very silly for us to try to recreate that wheel. Just go look at his wheel. It's great. And because he has such great content out there that's helpful to people in the military and municipal government who are getting pensions, we are actually going to be putting out his book on the topic. This is one of the best books I've read in a long time. And when I first sat down, I was like, whew, a book on pensions. And then I tore through it. It was really well done. It was really informative. So I'm excited to be able to bring that to everybody here in the next few months. Look out for updates, but definitely head over to Grumpus Maximus and his blog now if you want to learn about pensions before the book comes out.
And MK, the we there is Chooseify Publishing that Correct. You are the head of, right?
Yes, correct, correct. So this is going to be one of the early books that we're publishing. We're planning to do a lot. So it was really exciting to be able to work with him through this process. Every experience is different. Obviously, the first book, working with three authors, had its own set of challenges. And this book, Grumpus is in Hawaii and planning to move to New Zealand. So there are some big time change differences here. But it's been so fun to be able to see the book come along. And people kept asking over at camp, like, what do I do about pensions? And I'm like, just wait, the book's coming. But in the meantime, you actually don't have to wait. You can go to Grumpus Maximus and his blog or check out episode 57 of the podcast where he talked about that with us.
So I want to add just a little flavor to that for people. So a book on pensions. Now here's the kind of what's going on in the background there. You know, we talk about how you can control your tax rate, but if you have a pension in the background, there's some amount of money that is kind of guaranteed. You've earned it. It's guaranteed. It's been set there for you. And when you retire, you're not retiring to no income, you're retiring to this income. But then the question is, how do you value that in your calculations? How valuable is the pension? And especially if they give you options on when you leave, how much you get, it's really useful to kind of understand the nuance and be able to quantify that in terms of the FI number that we traditionally talk about. So this book, aside from being an incredible read and just fun all the way around, will be an incredible value to, as you said, municipal workers, people that have traditional pensions, people in the military. I mean, there's a pretty big audience for this, people that would benefit from this or have someone that would benefit from this information.
Absolutely. And he walks through all the factors. Will you be getting healthcare as part of your pension? Is your pension relatively safe? Is it going to be there in 20 years when you may need it? So lots of really great content there. So look out for that.
I think we have two other announcements. The first one we have, and I guess I'll send this to you, MK, is Everyday Courage, the YouTube channel.
Yes, we have been so excited to see the success of Jillian's podcast, Everyday Courage. It's really inspiring a lot of people. And many of you who listen to this podcast actually do so on YouTube. So we're available on your podcast player or on YouTube. And so you can now also listen to Everyday Courage or watch the episodes on YouTube as well. So if you have been waiting for to be able to switch over to another YouTube channel to watch Everyday Courage, you can now do that. So definitely check that out. Give it a listen wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. You can now do that.
And so that's a weekly show, you know, unlike the show that's coming out twice a week, that's a weekly show. The first episode is going to be live on YouTube on the 21st, and then it'll be weekly from there. I want to send this over to you, Brad. I know we had one additional announcement with regards to FI 101. It's FI 101. It's part of the Choosify Academy. It's under the Choosify Foundation. It's a free course. We announced it last week for individuals that are looking to start learning about financial literacy, to start designing their own path to financial independence. And one of the things we suggested last week was that you do it and use some accountability. Do this with other people in your local group. I know we announced how you can access that, but remind people. And then also there's one additional announcement we had with regards to some extra software that's been built into FI 101, which I think people will find very useful.
Yeah, Jonathan, this launch of FI 101 is extraordinarily exciting. And you can find it at choosify.com/FI101. That'll send you to the sign-up page. And the course actually goes live on January 25th. And Jonathan, we have a couple thousand people signed up for this already. So this is going to be remarkable. And like you said, a community. I actually already started taking the course myself just to get a feel for it. And it's so cool. They have a forum with discussion topics on each individual lesson. There's going to be a community within a community here at the FI 101 course. So yeah, what Stephen and Melissa and the whole team have put together is remarkable. And Jonathan, like you mentioned, we actually have something to announce, which is awesome. We had Tyson Koska on our show on episode 149. He created the retirement planning software called On Trajectory. We've partnered with him, and he actually built a set of calculators for FI 101. This is going to be available as part of this free course, FI 101. So that's just another reason to sign up for it. And yeah, what Tyson and the team at On Trajectory can put together in just such a short time since we talked to them about this, it's truly remarkable. So a huge thanks to them. And if you're out there listening to this and you are getting started on the path to FI, or you have friends, family, colleagues, anybody you think would be interested in learning about the path from financial literacy to financial independence, I think FI 101 is the best way possible. So send them that link, choosefi.com/FI101.
All right. Well, unfortunately, that's going to bring this episode to a close. Now, as you know, we like to finish every Friday roundup by doing a drawing for a copy of a book that we have found useful. We're doing our book, Choosify, Your Blueprint to Financial Independence, which you can find anywhere books are found, or you can purchase a copy at choosefi.com/book, or you could win a copy for free. All you have to do to win a copy for free is just go to choosify.com/iTunes, follow the instructions there, leave us a short written review on iTunes or Stitcher, you know, whatever that platform is for you, and then send us an email to feedback@choosify.com, letting us know that you left a review and what screen name you left it under. We give away one book for every 5 written reviews that we get, and we announce a winner on the Friday roundup. MK, how many winners do we have today?
Well, we have one winner today, and that is Paul. Paul writes, "Love the show. I enjoy your practical approach to reaching FI. I started listening to these podcasts on my commute to work, and they have changed my direction towards reaching my goals. Keep up the good work, and I look forward to enjoying future podcasts."
Awesome. All right, Brad, well, what I was thinking, a couple of things, you know, in the spirit of going back and hitting topics that we haven't touched on in a while, I was realizing it really is time to update our Roth conversion case study. And also really maybe go back and look at Free Money again, which episode 13 with Millionaire Educator, he just does such a remarkable job taking taxation and turning it into a story. I thought maybe we could talk about picking out your own free money story and deciding how much tax you want to pay in the coming year. Maybe we can do that on an upcoming Friday roundup. So, all right, my friends, you know, the conversation, this is where we make it happen. And the case studies, this is the platform we like to use to do that. So I hope you'll join us in the very near future as we bring that to you. The fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.